And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Well, today we're going to have a very quick hour because, well, we've got a great author and a book here, and we're going to talk about this subject. And I've always been interested in the subject of World War II, but don't think that you're going to hear a normal tale. I mean, I know that you've seen many movies and TV shows, read so many books about World War II. They're coming out your ears, right? It's been called the Good War, as if any murderous conflict could be called good. But that's what World War II has been, because they said the enemy that we had in Hitler and in a lesser vein, Mussolini, were so bad and so evil. They incorporated Satan himself, diabolical. But the United States, you know, went to war with this horrible person, and we overcame, and that's why it was such a good war. And anything we can do to stop these terrible Nazis, well, then we should do it. And you've seen all these movies about what we did. We destroyed Germany. Well, Mike King, he has maybe a different slant on this war. Now, let me tell you about Mike King. Mike King has written a book. It's called The Bad War: The Truth Never Taught About World War II. Now, I love this cover. It's a big book, sort of like my encyclopedic books. And it's got many, many pictures in it to help you as you go along and really give you, wow. Here's page 103, for example. There's about 12 or 15 pictures that I haven't seen some of about Adolf Hitler. And they're sort of interesting. There's many covers of books and newspaper headlines. And you begin to understand, you sort of feel like you were in that war. You were there at the time. And it's very, very, very touching to you. Now, maybe what we were taught about World War II was not true. It seems that Mike King's got a different take on it. Now, Mike King's a graduate of Rutgers University, the State University of New Jersey. Rutgers, very fine school. And he lives in New Jersey, right outside of New York. He's, he's really like a detective. He's a detective of truth. They call people who go after truth revisionist, because they take what other people say and really mine it and find out what really did happen, and they revise it a bit. Now, if we didn't have people like Mike King, well, I don't know what we would do, because a lot of history is just evil. You know, Henry Ford, the great industrialist, said history is bunk. And maybe we'll bring you through a few others here, too, that Mike King discusses in his book. They didn't have too much love for history either. Well, I should say they had a lot of love for history, true history. In any case, Mike King, welcome to Power of Prophecy.
Well, Tex, it's great to be with you. Thanks for that wonderful introduction. And I couldn't have said it any better myself. You know, I would add, Napoleon once said, history is the fables that men have agreed upon.
Hmm.
And I think the trick is to go back in time and do just like a judge in a court case would do, a wise judge. You hear both sides of the story completely, and then you attempt to triangulate with independent information and ascertain who's telling the truth. And that's what I've done with the Bad War. And what I found, it's not merely a question of us having been deprived of the whole truth, or the story merely being embellished. It's more than that, Tex. What I'm here to tell you is that the entire story of World War II, from start to finish, is a fairy tale. It is the most monstrous lie ever told. It's on a par with 9/11, only it's an even bigger event.
Hmm. Now, we've always been told that Germany was a good nation, until around 1932 when the Nazis came in and this madman, Hitler, took over the country. There he was, like a cartoon character. And he had hypnotic abilities to persuade the masses. And he led them into this great war because he wanted to run the world. He wanted to control the whole world. And he wanted to stamp out freedom everywhere and bring dictatorial, totalitarian control over mankind. How do you feel about that kind of description, Mike?
Well, you know, it is the hallmark of a true psychopath or sociopath to always project his neuroses onto others. So, in other words, everything that the Zionist controlled United States and United Kingdom have then and now projected onto so-called Nazi Germany is exactly what we've been trying to do for the longest time. Exactly the opposite is true. Hitler was fighting for freedom, and indeed, he was the only figure in history, really, who liberated his country from the New World Order. He actually beat them, at least for a period of 12 years or so. And that's what the war was about. And I know you've talked a lot about these issues and the Rothschild and New World Order and so on. Adolf Hitler was the man who beat the Rothschilds and essentially took away their institutions and their control over Germany. And once you understand that, the rest of the big lie is easy to unravel. But that was the motive right there.
Well, you know, it comes down really, I don't want to just emphasize this, because when you say something like the Jews, right away a lot of people's their eyes gloss over, you know, Mike, and sure. they don't understand. But he was faced with a horrible situation. I mean, communism was winning, you know, the conflict everywhere. Stalin had taken over many countries. In fact, I've always wondered, I've asked people about this question, really educated people. I've always said, why, how did World War II get started? And if they're really educated, they'll say, well, it got started when Hitler invaded Poland. And I say, well, you know, Stalin also invaded Poland and took around half of it at the same time. Why didn't we have war against Stalin? And, you know, they'd know nothing about that. And they act totally surprised. They go home and they really don't understand. How did that happen? How did a man who invaded half a country, we went to world war against him, horrible war, but another guy invaded the other half of the country and he became our ally and we gave him billions of dollars in arms to invade other countries. Isn't that sort of strange?
It's quite a double standard. And once you grab hold of that thread, and that was one of the things that always intrigued me ever since I was a child. Of course, I didn't figure out the answers till I was an adult. But I always wondered about that situation that you just reviewed. But it goes even deeper than that. Mm. You know, we're just left to assume that Poland was this innocent, angelic little regime that Hitler just decided to pick on. Well, I go into great detail in The Bad War about the military dictator of Poland. Oh, yeah, I bet you never knew that Poland had a military dictatorship. And before the war with Germany had even broken out, he had already invaded one country. He took a piece of Czechoslovakia. This is the Polish dictator. And he had shaked down another small country, Lithuania. And I quote extensively from an article in the New York Times that I dug up from 1938. It shows that this Polish thug caused jitters on Wall Street because he was so reckless. They didn't know if this guy was going to trigger a war with the Soviet Union or what have you. He was going to go into Lithuania. So, you know, this was not a nice man. His name was Marshal Edward Wrigley Smythe. And there's a whole story of how Poland relentlessly provoked Germany. And how Hitler took this abuse. I mean, he didn't just turn the other cheek. He turned the other cheek 5, 6, 7 times because he did not want a war. And the only reason Poland was so bold in provoking Germany was that similar to the situation with Ukraine today, Poland had a military guarantee given to them by Britain and France. So that was the game, Tex. Poland was supposed to pick a fight with Germany, and then the world would say Germany was the bad guy. They started it. And then England and France would declare war. And that's exactly what happened. But so just suffice it to say, and all the details are in the bad war, that this was a very rogue, corrupt little thug puppet regime in Poland that was being manipulated by the UK and by France from across the pond, behind the scenes. We now know, there's documentation to confirm this, FDR was also inciting the Poles to provoke Hitler. That's the truth.
Now, you know, there's another fact here, too. If we look at something that's maybe, it's really relevant, and maybe your book doesn't quite cover it exactly, but, you know, the Khazarians, who were really the Jews, who were Khazars from centuries ago and settled in Poland and some of the other countries thereabouts, but Poland was really run by a lot of the Jews who became the chief communist and began to terrorize and have a murderous onslaught against the Jewish nation itself. They claimed to be Poles, of course. They were Jewish Poles, meaning they were Khazars. So Poland had this horrible problem of these Khazars who, in 1948, many of these Khazars from Poland were given arms by Stalin and went into Israel. So Israel was founded by these communist monsters from Poland. So, you know, that would make Poland even more dangerous and even more volatile and really, really...
Well, yes, because ultimately what really forced Hitler's hands, and believe me, he did not want to go into Poland, but he had to because there were German populations stranded in Poland. They had been reassigned there by the horrific Treaty of Versailles after World War I. That's a whole other story I cover in my book. But these people were being slaughtered by armed gangs. And these were Bolsheviks. These were Polish Bolsheviks who were murdering. And I've got the pictures in my book. I mean, this is horrific stuff they were doing, Tex. I mean, they were gouging out people's eyes, ripping out their genitals, raping, killing. And still, Hitler tried to look the other way and negotiate a peace. That Germany even went to the Vatican, hoping that the Pope could intercede and sponsor a conference. But the British said no. So, I mean, the provocations are outrageous. And when they started murdering people, these Bolsheviks, these Polish Jews, I mean, that was really the final straw. Germany had no choice but to go in and liberate that German enclave that had been stolen from her 25 years earlier. And these are all facts, and you won't find any of this in a high school history book, a college history book, History Channel, PBS, Hollywood films, etc. The truth has been denied to us.
Well, you know, when I was a young man, I was a big reader, Mike, and I loved to read about World War II. And I remember reading this, I don't know if it was an article or book now, but it told the story of the Katyn Forest. And it said that Hitler invaded and took over Poland. And, of course, that brought France and England into the war because they'd guaranteed Poland, you know, a pact. But so Hitler took over Poland. And they said that he destroyed the Polish economy. And that he took like 40,000 of the top Polish soldiers, you know, what we would call the intelligentsia, you know, the top people.
Right.
And he took them into this forest, drove them in, you know, tied their hands behind their back, took them into the Katyn Forest, and just mowed them down and just killed all 40,000 of them and left them there rotting in that forest. And for many years, I thought, that's just terrible. What a monster that was. And then, you know, it was only about 12 or 13 years ago that I read this little column, like on page 48 of the New York Times. That told the truth about it. Actually, it was the Soviet Union, and it was the part of Poland that they had invaded and conquered. And they were the ones that took the Polish soldiers into the forest at Katyn. They're the ones that killed them. It wasn't the Nazis at all. And so this is...
That's right.
But, you know, people still don't get that. And people still are telling me, I still read about it in books all the time, what the Germans did in the Katyn Forest. It's astonishing what we blame the Nazis for, isn't it?
Well, you know, once the war was ended and Germany was just destroyed, and again, we go back to this business of projection, the German intelligentsia was exterminated, the so-called denazification. And Germany has been occupied ever since. But it wasn't just a surrender and a defeat of a country. The entire German ruling regime and ruling class was exterminated or arrested or silenced. And that made it easy for the Allies to just invent whatever story they want, because there's nobody left to contradict you. And again, you'll see in my book, I've got the newspaper articles to demonstrate this. The report on Auschwitz was issued on the same day, and this is in the New York Times, the same day that Germany surrendered unconditionally.
Mm.
The Soviets had liberated Auschwitz 4 months earlier, okay? So why did they wait 4 months to tell the world that there was a Holocaust? Because they had to wait till Germany was out of business. Because had they said it earlier, Germany would have said, this is a lie, bring in the Red Cross and we'll show you. You understand? So it just on and on it goes. Once the German regime was completely destroyed, you could attach any lie you want to the narrative and nobody could contradict it.
Mm.
The entire country, all of Europe, was under U.S. military occupation and censorship. So you could invent whatever fairy tale you want. And it stuck, and it sticks to this day.
Well, you know, I was watching Fox News last week, and it's on Google, and they were discussing, I mean, it just shocked me. It was a quick 1 minute, but they were talking about the fact that these murders by ISIS, you know, where they take the guys in the orange suits, and I wondered how they got the orange suits, you know, but they take the guys in orange suits, Christians, and took them to the beach and cut off their heads. And they actually admitted on Fox News that this was a hoax, that these were filmed, and they even knew where the studio was that ISIS used and made these films, and there were no murders like that. And you think about that. Of course, we know about Osama bin Laden. How many versions of him did we see dead, right?
Right.
And all of them were just faked. We don't even know what really happened when SEAL Team 6 went in and got him. That was probably hoaxed too.
He died back in 01. I'm sure of it.
There you go. See now, and it seems like everybody else is sure of it too. You know, the Pakistanis say it, the French say it, every other intelligence, the German intelligence, but the Americans keep lying to the people, and the people believe it. So now let's start off with your book a little bit, because I think people need to understand where Germany was in 1939 when the big war broke out. But evidently Germany had gone from a terrible economic state and a terrible moral state. And then they brought Hitler in, and he was elected, of course. Most people don't even know that. They think he was a dictator. They took office, but he was elected. And he did perform an economic and really, you might say, a moral miracle inside Germany, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't think there's any precedent to compare it to. The depth of the German collapse, it wasn't just economic, it was cultural, it was moral. Berlin was the homosexual, transgender, you know, nightlife capital of the world.
Mm.
Degeneracy had taken hold in Berlin. Unemployment, one-third, 33% unemployment. This is what Hitler walked into.
Wow.
You had a communist party that was, you know, active and agitating for overthrown dictatorship in the street. The people were demoralized. There was 250,000 suicides in the 3 years prior to Hitler assuming power. You know, there's no exaggerating just the depths of the moral depravity and the economic destitution that he walked into. And after 3 years, Germany is enjoying full employment, the strongest currency in the world, a moral and cultural and artistic revival, and a And again, there's no denying this. I've got quotes in my book there from some very big people in Europe, people from Norway, people from England, the former Prime Minister of England, the King of England, King Edward, praising Hitler. Even Churchill had to acknowledge in 1936 the great achievement of Hitler. And he said, this may be the greatest man in Europe since Pericles of ancient Greeks. Mm. Churchill said that. So, you know, how did he do that? Well, essentially, he chased the moneylenders out of the temple. Use a metaphor. And, you know, so unlike, you know, the Marxists who always say that they're for the people and equality and so on, the difference with Hitler is he delivered on that. He was truly the people's leader. And the people adored him. And this was across all classes. The intellectual elite supported him, and the common man supported him. The big, wealthy entrepreneur, businessman class supported him, and labor supported him. And, in fact, the 6 million Communist Party voters, okay, within 3 years, they were among the strongest supporters of Hitler. And I'm not talking about the hardcore, evil, conspiratorial communists. We're talking about, you know, your ordinary, naive person who believes all that garbage about workers of the world united and all that. So he won over the entire country, and he didn't do it by brainwashing people. He did it by delivering results. He was true. He was honest. He was good. And, you know, you see the pictures in my book there, and there's so many online. I mean, everywhere he went, the spontaneous mobs that would turn out to greet him, women breaking out in tears. I mean, I can't think of anything like it in the contemporary world of today. There is no doubt that he was the most beloved leader of the modern era.
Well, you know, let's look at that just a moment, because we would tend to think, from all the propaganda that America's been fed over the years, that he was a monster, that maybe he looked good, you know, to the cameras, to the movie cameras, but backstage, in other words, in the, what would you call it, back in the dungeons of the chancellery, he was killing people left and right. Now, he did, later on, he did kill some people, I'm sure, but he seemed to be genuinely for the people. Now, I've never read anywhere that he was money-oriented. In other words, he never said, I want to have a big castle. I want to outdo, let's say, King Ludwig, you know, Bavaria,
yeah,
and build a giant mansion. I want to be known as the most wealthy man in the world, more than Rockefeller and Rothschild ever dreamed of. But really, it was very modest, wouldn't it? And I guess he wore that uniform because he didn't want to appear, I don't know, what would you call it, too flamboyant or whatever. So
he put the uniform on during the war.
Uh-huh. Okay.
He generally just dressed in civvies, unless it was like a state function. But when the war started, put on his old coat, and he pledged not to take it off until the war was over. And, you know, again, Tex, there's so many pictures of him in a regular suit and street clothes and leisure clothes, and, or smiling and with little children or feeding deer or laughing. One of the most photographed men in history, but you don't see those photos. No, they always give you the same shot of him in a moment of passion delivering a speech, and then that's always followed by goose-stepping soldiers. So, you know, that's part of the manipulation. But I go into my book and into who he was as a man, and everyone around him in his circle, even some of the people who survived the war, in retrospect, they spoke of him as a gentleman. He was very humble. You know, he was like a father figure to his secretaries. He used to like the temperature very cold, but he always made sure that they had a heater next to them so they wouldn't be cold.
I see.
So he's a very simple man. He came from nothing. He's self-educated, and yet he's one of the most cultivated intellects of the 20th century. He understood mechanics. He had a deep background in poetry. I've got pictures of some of his paintings and his artwork. Was a very good painter and an artist.
Well, that's another thing, you know, Mike. They say he was a, you know, 2-bit painter. Never did anything. I'm just talking about the propaganda against him.
Yeah.
But now, actually, you say he wore that uniform during the war era. He deserved that uniform. He had the highest hero decoration given to Germany's military heroes, didn't he, from World War One?
Well, that's right. I mean, he volunteered for World War One, first of all. Okay, he wasn't drafted. He volunteered. He was turned down by Austria because he had had tuberculosis when he was young. He was a little skinny, a little scrawny. So what does he do? He goes to Bavaria, which is part of Germany at that time. They were allied. And he fights with them. So he did not have to go to war, and he went. And he was decorated for bravery. He was wounded. He had a very bad leg injury. Again, he was sent home. He could have stayed home because of that injury. But once it healed, he went back to the front. Very dangerous work he used to do. He was gassed as the German Iron Cross winner two different occasions. He was decorated for conspicuous bravery. So, you know, he was no shirker. Nobody could deny his courage. So you have a man of unusual courage, unusual intellect, and, you know, great charisma. It's, you know, after the war, when he joined this little party, it was called the National Socialist Workers' Party, he was only the seventh member. So he's got no money, he's got no connections, his parents are dead. But just on the force of his oratory and his logic, he began to build a group around him. And again, this is, I don't know of anything like this in history. I mean, you look at Alexander the Great, his father was a king. You look at Napoleon, he came from an elite family. Or even if you look at some of the bums in America who rise to the top, like Obama, it's only because a powerful force above them put them there. But this man picked himself up from nothing, educated himself, and became the Führer of a great nation.
Well, you know, Mike, I'm an ex-military man. You know, I was in the Air Force and retired as an officer after 20 years. And I have respect for the military very much. And when I look around at our politicians, we have a bunch of draft dodger cowards. I mean, every one of them. You know, you take George Bush. Well, the guy, he joined the National Guard to get out of going to Vietnam. And then he never showed up for duty, you know, in the National Guard, the crumb. And then there was, of course, you name Barack Obama. He shirked military duty. And then there are these people, I mean, all of them, whether it's Hannity, even you go over to the media, Rush Limbaugh.
Limbaugh, yeah.
He claimed he had a pilonidal cyst and couldn't go in. All these people, they're all a bunch of jerks. Clinton, of course, he was a draft dodger. And we have all the paperwork to prove from his own handwriting. You know, he sent letters and such. So we had, you know, our leaders in America are a bunch of cowards and draft dodgers. And, you know where I stand on that, I guess, Mike.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this is the whole thing. We've only got 1 minute on this side. So here is Germany at the suddenly brought to its peak of economic and military power by a very humble man who was first elected, whom the people wanted in power, and he was not a totalitarian, and certainly we have more surveillance and spying on us as citizens than happened in Germany at that time. So,
sure.
So now let's go back to, when we come back, let's look at what happened in World War II, though. Did he betray the people? Was he the monster? Did he set up the Holocaust camps and things like that? Is he the one responsible for starting this war and refusing to have peace with Great Britain and the United States and so forth? That's what I've always, was always told, that was the problem, that he refused peace. But I want to know the truth when we come back. I think you're the man for it. Okay.
Bring it on.
Bring it on. Okay. My guest is Mike King. He's the author of The Bad War, The Truth Never Taught About World War II, a wonderful book. I'm Tex Morris. We'll be right back after this message. The Bad War. Well, if you hadn't heard about it, you need to hear about it. Maybe you've heard about the Good War. You know, the war we had with Germany and with Mussolini and Italy, and that we fought and we defeated the Nazi powers. You never quit hearing about that war. But, you know, this is the same war. The bad war, I see the cover of this book, and bad goes over good. Because Mike King tells you what really happened. How did this war begin? Did Hitler, was he a mad dictator who wanted a war? Was that his game? Was he just crazy and insane? All of the things you think you know, you're going to find out are not true. Now, there are a lot of people, I noticed some of the comments on the back cover of this book, and by the way, it's a beautiful cover, it's a great book, but some of the comments are from people who say they're thankful to the author, Mike King, because they say that they're now like waking up from a bad dream. They're understanding now what really occurred. And yes, I'm going to just tell you the truth. I've always thought Hitler was a madman, but I'm evaluating my thoughts on him. Now, you know, I've never liked any politician. I think they're all a bunch of bums, and Hitler and probably too. But, you know, in light of the horrible things they say about him, maybe he's not so bad. I know Saddam Hussein was loved by the Iraqi people. Saddam Hussein could go walking in Baghdad, and he would get out of his car or his Jeep, and thousands of people would surround him and go up and shake his hand and hug his neck. Thousands of people. Not one of them ever tried to kill him. And yet Iraq has, everybody, seemed like everybody owns a gun there. Remember that they'd take and shoot him up straight into the air? Thousands would shoot their guns off at the same time. He was never, they never tried to kill the guy. He was wildly popular. And when America took over, well, they didn't parade in the streets. They didn't give us a celebration. In fact, I understand that we had to bring in a team of saboteurs to take down that statue that was in that public square. Remember that? Because the people stayed in their home. Saddam Hussein was wildly popular. Now, when we took over the country, we killed the guy. We gave him a trial, as we do all the innocent or guilty, whatever they are. You know, they're going to die. And then his political party, the Ba'ath Party, we put them out of office, and they didn't get anything. They didn't get any of the military slots or anything. Just what happened to the Nazis in World War II. I'm wondering if this is another series of lies. And I'm delighted to wake up and say, I'm going to discover the truth. I'm going to find out what kind of guy Hitler was. I know about what kind of man Churchill was. He was a drunk. He was an idiot. He was a murderer. We now know that. And we know that Franklin Roosevelt was a communist. And he lied to us about how we got into World War II with Pearl Harbor. Thousands of Americans died. And then he railroaded the generals that were in charge of Pearl Harbor. And only it was in the 1990s that our Congress secretly exonerated them. Secretly exonerated Short and Kimmel, the guys that had been blamed for it all. So we know that we got into a war, a horrible war, because of monsters like Roosevelt and Churchill. But they've been made to be heroes. What about Hitler? What about Mussolini? Maybe these guys were the real heroes. And if they had won, you know, Pat Buchanan wrote a great book recently. Said maybe we fought on the wrong side. Oh, man, they hated the guy for that. How could he say such a thing? Maybe we fought on the wrong side. Well, that's what Mike King is saying here, in effect. I want you to have this book. By the way, there's no other book like this. There's no other book that you can read. I know Pat Buchanan did a good job with his book, but this book has pictures. It has, well, it takes you all the way to the First World War, to the end of the Second World War, and even after that. And you find out about the horror that happened to the German people. Boy, you didn't want to be in Germany at the end of World War II. You didn't want to be a good person then. Well, in any case, I want you to have this book. You must have this book. It's $25. It's a big book, a lot of pictures in it. $25, add $5 shipping and handling, a total of $30, and send it to Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733, or just phone us. You can phone us here at 1-800. That's a toll-free call, of course. 1-800-234-9673. Hey, you can go on our website, that is, powerofprophecy.com, or just textmars.com. And we're going to have the book. We're going to put it on today, Jerry, right there on our website. And so they just go there and then click on and use their PayPal or their charge card and order this book. Now, you're going to be happy that you got this book. You know, we're finding out more and more the liars, the draft dodgers, the killers, the psychopaths that we have in charge of this country. And thank God for people like Mike King who love the truth and who are tormented by the lie. And they're tormented by people dying, good people, killed by these monsters. And, you know, Jesus Christ himself said, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Don't you want to know the truth, my dear friend? Then please, start learning the truth and start discovering it and see that there is another view. There's another observation here. And read about it, and then make up your own mind. Don't be told by anybody, but know the truth for yourself. And that's why we offer The Bad War. Total of $30. That'll take care of all the shipping and handling. You go to powerofprophecy.com and click on it and get the book. We want you to have this book. And I want you to get it and be so impressed, and you will be, that you're going to ask your friend to order a copy. Maybe you'll like to order two or three copies and give away a couple to friends. By the way, the book cover is designed by David Dees, great artist. He does a lot of things for rents.com online. David Dees, a great patriot artist, David Dees, who did the cover for this book, The Bad War. The truth never taught about World War II. Okay, let's go to our program. And we still have Mike King with us. Mike King, you're not going to run him off.
What's that?
I said, we're not going to run you off because you're a bulldog.
Oh, yeah. This is a big subject.
It is, but you grasp on
to it. But I tell you what, I cover, and you know, I actually touch upon events in the late 19th century, which contribute to the lead up to these world wars.
Hmm.
You're not going to find that much history packed into a couple hundred pages rich with photos. But yeah, I mean, I go way back. There's a quick quote I'd like to read you from the great Russian novelist Tolstoy.
Mm-hmm.
This is from 1896. This is what he said. Actually, 1894. The French and the British had just sucked in the Tsarist Russians into an alliance. And Tolstoy, who's Russian, saw it as a trick. And he said of this alliance, he says, the Franco-Russian alliance cannot now present itself as anything other than what it is, a league of war. How is it that people, the French, who, without reason, have suddenly professed such spontaneous and exceptional love for Russia? So, in other words, this is many, many years, this is decades before he was already figured out, being the great man of literature that he is. Great writers have a way of seeing through phoniness. He figured out that there was the fix was in to take down Germany. This is in 1894.
Mm.
So that's the kind of background that I give the reader in just 240 pages. So this didn't start with Poland. You know what I'm saying, Tex?
Yeah.
Well, that's all the narrative starts. September 1st, you invade Poland. A little deeper than that. I give you the whole story.
Well, 1894, that was just a few years before the World Zionist Congress.
Yeah, it was all coming together at that time, because World War One was planned for that reason. World War One was planned, number one, to enable the Western powers to steal Palestine, and number two, to have a war that's so destructive that out of it could emerge the embryo of the New World Order, and that was the League of Nations. So this stuff was already in the works long before Hitler came along. And it's imperative to understand that if you're going to understand World War II and if you're going to understand what's going on today.
Now, Hitler. Hitler evidently was not, according to your book here, was not a man of war. He was a man of peace, and he tried to get peace with the West, meaning, you know, with France and Britain. But of course, he did want a war on Russia. But look at what Russia had done. They had already commenced to murder millions of Christians in Russia, the Jews there, you know, Lenin and Trotsky and, of course, Stalin. So he did war on, and rightly so, he did war on the Soviet Union. But didn't he try to get England and France to join him in this holy crusade against the communists?
Well, you know what? Even with the Soviet Union, he was prepared to coexist peacefully with them. And they signed a non-aggression pact. Now, we've all heard that in 1941, Hitler broke the deal and he attacked Stalin. Okay? But what we're never told, and this is documented in my book, is that Stalin was preparing to take advantage of the situation of Germany and England being at war and stab Germany in the back, exactly as they had done to Poland a few years earlier. There was a massive, historic military buildup right along the German frontier. The Soviets were coming. And Hitler knew this. And we've had defectors from the Soviet Union years ago came out and confirmed this. Stalin was getting ready to take all of Europe. Hitler saw it coming. He hit him first, and he surprised him, and he saved Europe. He saved all of Europe. Nothing would have stopped Stalin if he had put that large force in motion. So even there, it was someone else provoking a defensive move from Germany. In that case, it was Stalin. Earlier, we talked about how Poland had provoked Germany. And this is the pattern throughout the war. Belgium and Holland, again, they were not neutral. That is a lie. They were totally in cahoots with the British and the French. They weren't going to invade Germany. But they had agreed to allow a multi-million man army that had gathered in northern France, of British and French.
Mm-hmm.
They were to be given safe passage through these tiny countries. They're only 100 miles wide. Into the German Rhineland, where all their industry is. So that is why, again, Hitler was forced in 1940 to move into Holland and Belgium, and then into France. Oh, and by the way, and this is in my book, you'll notice in my book text that I rely heavily upon the front page headlines of the New York Times of that day. And the reason I do that is because, you know, they can't deny it. I mean, when you can get your enemy to make a concession for you, it's all the more powerful.
Oh, yes.
I've got a headline in the book. September 1939. This is 9 months before Hitler went into France. This is 9 months earlier. It says, France invades Germany. And you can see it right in the book. And Germany did not respond. Can you believe it? In the same headline, it says, Germany offers peace. I mean, you tell me who's the aggressor. Your country has been invaded. The French have advanced 10 miles into your country. And your response is another peace offer. And that's right there in the New York Times. Nobody can deny that.
So they were really trying to provoke Germany to start the war. So, well, you know, let's go to Dunkirk. A lot of people remember the miracle at Dunkirk, how Hitler had conquered France and the British troops there in France. And there were, I don't know how many, over 100,000 British troops. They were there on the coast. They had no way to, I mean, they were going to be captured. They could have all been just killed. There they were, you know, on the coast, just trying, you know, they were all huddled together. They had been defeated. And Hitler suddenly stopped. And we know now that his own generals had said, we need to go ahead and conquer these people. And maybe, you know, we can go ahead and conquer England. They'll have nobody there. We're on a roll now. We've got the British going. And Hitler stopped suddenly and said, well, let's go no further. And his generals were upset at him, from what I've read. And the British say that was the reason they were able to prosecute the war. They could have been defeated at that moment. The British admit that at Dunkirk. But Hitler suddenly stopped. Now, up to now, I've always read that Hitler was just a stupid military strategist. There he was on the threshold of victory at Dunkirk. All of these poor British soldiers out there in the open on the beaches, you know. But evidently there was other things going on that we now know are true about Hitler and what was going on. So tell us a little bit about Dunkirk, would you?
Well, sure. Hitler was a humanitarian. That's the truth. That's a whole other story. He didn't want to kill those men, and nor did he want to capture me. His thinking was that if he could allow 250,000 Englishmen to escape unmolested with their dignity intact, that it would give a big boost to the peace movement in England. And yes, there were many people high up in the English intelligentsia who wanted no part of this war. And you know, it's easy to say in retrospect he made a blunder, but I mean, that was his thinking. So these men were allowed to escape in these little British fishermen boats. The German Air Force could have blew them out of the water easily, but they didn't. The German Panzer divisions could have advanced toward the beach, but they didn't. So this was a gracious act by an old school gentleman. And how did Churchill repay this kindness? Well, they spun the so-called escape into an escape, into a miracle. That they did this right under Hitler's nose. So they spun it into this great military victory. And it was nothing of the kind. Hitler was trying to make peace. And a few months after that, Britain is continuing the war from the air and at sea. And this is something that stunned me when I found it. I don't think there's anything in history that you could compare this to, Tex. Mm-hmm. But the German Luftwaffe, while Britain was dropping bombs on Germany, they had already begun bombing, they dropped leaflets on London, peace flyers. It was a copy of a speech that Hitler had given to the Reichstag called A Final Appeal to Reason. So he's trying to go over the head of the British government and maybe go directly to the people, maybe get some publicity in the British news, but it was printed in English. They dropped peace leaflets on London, urging them, listen, let's just stop and end this thing. He didn't want war. He wanted to go home. He wanted to leave Belgium. He wanted to leave Holland, and he wanted to leave northern France. And I have a copy of the leaflet. Again, you can see the image in my book. And, you know, Britain's response was they spun this, too, that this is a form of weakness. It was weak. He's begging for peace. I mean, he just chased the entire army off the continent. And here he is, begging for peace.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think it's a great thing here. Now we know, by the way, there's a book out. I don't know who wrote it or whatever recently. But I read the review, and the review was like, it's amazing. Hitler actually wanted peace, and that's why he allowed the British to survive at Dunkirk. Could it be that Hitler was a peaceful man? That's what they're saying now, you see. So this revisionist idea is catching hold, evidently, on quite a large scale. And you're one of the pioneers of it, Mike. Now, I want to mention, people, before I go any further, you have a website called tomatobubble.com. So it's all one word, right? Tomatobubble.com. And I've been on that website, and it's sort of like historical revisionism. So, you know, you have a lot of good things on there. So, folks, you want to know about Mike King's website? He writes most of it himself, does a great job. Go to tomatobubble.com. And, Jerry, could we link to that, too?
All right, sure, folks can get a free report at tomatobubble.com by joining my mailing list. The free report is called How to Respond to an Anti-Conspiracy Theorist.
Oh, now that's good.
Gives you all the rebuttals, you know, that people usually, to people's objections to conspiracies. So that's a free report.
How do they get that?
Economics and current events. So definitely something to bookmark, tomatobubble.com.
Okay, now how do they get this free report?
Oh, well, you'll see on the website pretty much every page. Okay. There'll be a box that says, get your free report, how to respond to conspiracy theories, and you simply submit your email.
Okay.
I send out free updates a couple times a week, and I would say 80% of the website's content is free of charge. Some items are pay-per-view, there's a little fee, but most of it is free. And it's always the same with all my work. I focus on trying to take something that seems complicated, and I boil it down. Simplicity, blurbs, and pictures. People really learn quick when they read my stuff.
Okay. Now, by the way, wasn't their intelligence system headed by none other than Victor Rothschild during World War II?
Well, you know, that I guess you learn something new every day. I had not heard of it. Naturally, the Rothschilds were always at the pinnacle of British high society ever since the days of Nathan. So that would not surprise me at all. I do know that Churchill's right-hand man, a fellow named Litchfield, who had come from Germany. I mean, this guy was Churchill's handler, and he was the main rabid monster calling for the murderous genocidal firebombing and carpet bombing of German neighborhoods.
Now, Germany, we offer a book here called Hellstorm, and about Thomas Goodrich. And it shows how Germany really was totally destroyed. So many millions of people lost their life after World War II.
That's right.
And that's sort of your finding as well, Mike.
It was. You know, Tex, I couldn't make it through that entire book. That's how badly it affected me.
Mm.
It was a pure, straight-up genocide. I mean, even if people make this twisted argument that crowded cities during wartime, well, it's moral, it's war, war is hell, and so forth. You know, that's a bogus argument, but even putting that aside, war was over, and they murdered millions of people or caused the death of millions of innocent Germans. Because the entire country was under military censorship, all of this has been buried. I mean, it is just an incredible story. I mean, everything we've heard about the phony Holocaust of Jews is actually another form. We go back to that projection. That is what was done to the Germans. There's no telling how many they killed or raped. I mean, establishment historians now concede that 2 million women were raped in the East mainly by the Soviet NKVD. 2 million. Girls as young as 10, women as old as 80. Gang raped night and day. Mass suicides, women jumping off of bridges, taking poison. They couldn't take the rapes anymore. And in the West, the noble Americans, well, you know, they didn't brutally rape German women. They were a little more subtle. They would give a starving German woman maybe a can of corn in exchange for sexual favors. So, and do you know that there's 250,000 babies were born to American GIs?
Mm.
Okay?
Mm.
And to me, that's a softer version of rape when you're starving a population, and that's what they did. They kept them hungry, and you know you reduce a woman to the point where she's your slave just to get a can of spam or something like that.
Oh, I'll tell
you. And it just goes on and on. It's just heartbreaking, and that's what drives me. To tell you the truth, is to get this truth out there. It's just one of the most monstrous events in world history. You'd have to go back to Genghis Khan days to find anything similar to what was done in Germany.
Well, Mike, I want to compliment you on your caring about this subject. You know, when you write a book like this and you expose true history and you do it for really good purposes, because you're so disturbed to see anyone, whether it's Germans or Jews or British or whatever, who are harmed, and you don't want anyone to be bloodied and butchered, and it just vexes you, it just torments you, and I know that feeling, and yet when you've written a book like this, then suddenly the critics come out, and especially from the Jewish side, and they blast you as a hater. You're anti-Semitic. You love Hitler. You're, you know, blah, 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 blah. And while you're sitting there at home, you just, you know, you're hurt. You're, you know, really, if they knew your heart, if they could just know your heart and what you really care about. But, you know, that's just part of life, I suppose.
It is. And it's even deeper than that, because on a personal level, I'll be quite honest with you, this has alienated so-called friends and even family, but it's just not something I'm in control of. I can't turn away from it, especially because it's going on today.
Yes.
Okay? You know, the butchers of today, the murderers, the communists, the Zionists, the one-worlders, they are the direct linear political descendants, and in some cases the family descendants, of the same gang of monstrous devils that perpetrated World War II. So it's going on now. I mean, I just put a piece up at Tomato Bubble last week on George Soros threatening China with World War III. Okay? And Russia and China with World War III. So it's going on now. People are still dying, still suffering. And then there's the economic suffering. There's the unraveling of our culture, of our morality. And God knows what's ahead. I mean, you see the White House lit up in homosexual colors. The great athlete Bruce Jenner becomes a so-called woman. I mean, on and on. This all ties in. So it's all part of it. My special focus is on World War II because it's such a foundational event. But so much of the garbage we see today came out of the aftermath of that bad war, that very, very bad war.
Well, Michael, I want to mention two other books that you've written also. First is, and this is very interesting, The War Against Putin, Vladimir Putin, What the Government Media Complex Is Not Telling You About the New Russia. And now, that's an interesting book, The War Against Putin. And then there's a book, The Real Roosevelts, An Omitted History. In other words, the history that's been omitted about the Roosevelts. These are two fascinating books. We only have about a minute left. Tell us a little bit about Putin, because this guy is being called another Hitler, another monster. I just don't see it.
Well, ironically, he is another Hitler in the sense that he is a man who inherited a destroyed, ransacked, morally bankrupt country and is bringing it back. They're bringing it back economically. Their military is back. But also, there's a moral component, and this drives the left crazy. I mean, you know, they will not allow homosexual propaganda for the children. They have mandatory morality and ethics training in the schools. They just banned dirty words in all their movies. So, again, you're seeing this cultural rebirth. They have a very market-based economy. They have the lowest taxes in Europe, a 13% flat tax. So, you know, Russia is not communist. Not even close anymore. And we see the same pattern now. And Putin has said that we will not surrender our sovereignty to what he calls the unipolar world. In other words, the New World Order. And again, if you have the understanding of World War II, you could clearly see the parallel here.
Well, yeah, I tell you. A lot of Americans are not buying into the Fox News report that Putin is evil and all these things. And I think the New World Order boys, they're shocked, Putin's success on these things. Well, Mike, I want to thank you so much for coming on and being our guest today. Your book is The Bad War, The Truth Never Taught About World War II. Thank you for doing this book, and thank you for being our guest today.
Well, that was a pleasure. That was the fastest moving hour I've spent in a while.
Well, that's good. And we try to make it fast for our folks, but I think they're going to read up. They're going to know more about this. And a lot of folks will get your book and spend many hours, finding out, because we have some very, very intelligent guys and women too. So thank you again. And God bless you, my friend.
Same to you. God bless.
All right. That was The Bad War, author Mike S. King, M.S. King. You can get his book for Amazon.com, but we hope you'll get it from us. Because, as you know, we are going to continue right on blasting the New World Order and telling you the truth. This is Tex Mars, and you've been listening to Power of Prophecy. My prayer is you'll tune in each week during the same time and discover the power of prophecy.